Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, April 19th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy Friday.
And a happy Friday to you. Also, a very happy Friday to my other guest, Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Those are your words.
That's who they are.
Name them. It's another Jesus Christ Superstar reference.
It is. All right. So it's Musical Reference Friday. Good to know. Everyone, update your records accordingly. And let's talk for a minute about ebooks. Andrew, you wrote up an interesting story, interesting to me, about this with regards to Microsoft's bookstore.
Yeah, so this guy, he wrote this piece saying that people are experiencing a crisis of confidence in ebooks. And he mentioned a couple of things, like Microsoft a couple weeks ago, they shut down their digital bookstore. They did offer refunds to people, so that's good at least. But, and then he mentions DRM, and basically the argument is people aren't as confident in ebooks as physical books because they're wondering if they really do own them, if a company can just shut down its bookstore.
Right.
It seems to me that the issue is more around DRM than ebooks themselves, because like I mentioned in my link teaser, Apple Books, as far as I know, all or most of them at least don't have DRM. Mm-hmm. So I can remove them from iTunes if I want and upload them to another service, which does give me more of a feeling that actually, yeah, I really do own these, at least as long as I have a device that I can read them on.
Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of stuff, that seems to be the case, at least, you know, from what I can tell, there tends to be a way to do any of this. And you know, the thing that I wonder about is how tied to the store some of these are. Like, for example, Apple with iBooks does not have a dedicated book reader. Like, there's an app that you can install that you can use to read those, but it's not a dedicated device. For example, like Amazon and the Kindle, because the Kindle itself, not the Kindle Fire, the other models, but like just the straight up Kindle, the point of it is to read, and the source of the things that you read upon it, by and large, is the Kindle bookstore. And what I don't know, and it would be a very good question to get to the bottom of, is if the Kindle store went away, if you could still read all the books that you bought. That would be a thing that I would wonder about.
There are apps, at least on the Mac. What's I've got one, the
Calibri.
Calibri.
Yes, that will Calibre? Read the Kindle files.
Calibri, yeah.
And, yeah. And one would assume that should Amazon make the ridiculous, Amazon's not going to exit the Kindle business.
No.
Right, so that's just not going to happen, at least not anytime in the near future. But if they were to do that, one would assume that to avoid the lawsuits, they would in some way open source or release the software that would allow people to continue reading their books.
Right.
So, I mean, there is a certain extent that this is a bit of a tempest in a teapot. At the same time, to even argue against my own arguing against everyone else, John Keats been talking for the long time about the cloud being a lie from the standpoint of any service that goes away. And that could include all of the services, even Apple's, even Amazon's, even Google's, even Microsoft's.
Yeah.
That any service that goes away takes your stuff with it.
Yeah.
This absolutely is a reality. And we are increasingly essentially putting our digital possessions into the hands of corporations.
Mm-hmm.
right? Where once we own the albums, I'm old, so I'm talking vinyl there. Once we own the CDs, at least, once we own the books, once we at least own the crappy VCR tapes or the DVDs, mm-hmm. Increasingly, we really don't have ultimate control over all this stuff. And that's a huge trade-off when it comes to all the convenience of being able to stream our stuff and take it with us everywhere and, you know, have everything available on a jillion different devices.
Right.
There are real trade-offs at stake.
Absolutely. The thing that I wonder, like, no, I do not believe Amazon's going to get out of the Kindle business anytime soon. But the thing that I am curious about is, say the store is down for some reason, right? And I don't know what kind of handshake process there is between my Kindle and Amazon anytime I open up a book and read a book. So if I have anything stored on my Kindle and I can't get to the Amazon store, to the Kindle store for some reason, like, do all my books still work? And I'm guessing the answer is yes, because anything that's stored locally is on its own, is there by itself. Maybe the handshake for the DRM may not work. I don't know anything about the DRM on Kindle books. I'm just sort of thinking out loud here. But I would imagine that, you know, barring some sort of secret handshaking that's happening in the background that I don't know anything about, it seems like at a minimum, I should be able to, like, sort of preserve that Kindle in amber, and anything that's on it, I should still be able to read regardless of the state of Amazon store or book selling or anything like that. And this Amazon store, the thing I'm curious about is why the books have to go away if just because Microsoft Store is going out of business. That's the thing that I was wondering about.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing, like you said, Andrew, that it's a DRM issue, that there's something with the DRM that means that those have to go away. Now, the people who bought books from the Microsoft Store did get refunds for any of the books that they had purchased. So that's at least good news.
The thing about DRM and ownership is that it is illegal to crack the DRM. Mm-hmm. So that goes directly into, am I owning this book or am I licensing it? And as we talked before the show, Microsoft closed its store. Amazon won't, but they did. There was this incident a few years ago where they, because of some copyright thing, they did remove copies of certain books from people's Kindles.
Yes.
Very ironically, George Orwell's books.
Yes. Yes, that Orwellian future you were reading about on your Kindle, it just happened to you on your Kindle.
Well, and I think that that's the bigger danger here. There's less danger in Amazon specifically leaving. Several things here. There's more danger in one of the big tech giants exiting a business that didn't take off, to it. Amazon to Microsoft, this thing we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is more danger in even the big tech giants in a business that they continue to stay in and continue to be big players in and continue to put resources into. There's a lot more danger that individual assets of yours could be removed.
Right. I'm less worried about the Amazon Kindle store folding than I am maybe a publisher decides to get out of the business and they want to take all their ebooks with them when they leave.
Yeah.
So that does seem far more likely, or that the rights change. You know, the reason you see articles every month at the beginning of the month and the end of the month about what's coming and going on Netflix every month because of the rights changing on things or stuff coming and going from HBO. Like, that's a thing that I wonder about. Like, with books, like, it doesn't seem like something that is sensible, but it is certainly something that is possible that you know, some publisher is going to decide, yeah, you know what, we're done with ebooks, we decided this was more hassle than it's worth and we're not going to do it anymore. And then what happens to books that were purchased before from that publisher before that publisher made that decision? These are the kind of things that we think about. So because I can tell you, like, I can hand a copy of a book off my bookshelf to Brian, and there's no DRM in that. There's no, I can read it as much as I want. Brian can read it as much as he wants. Brian can give it back to me.
You can go sell it.
I can go sell it. Yeah. I can take it back to Powell's where I bought it and get more money. Yeah. I can say, hey, Brian, just keep that book. It's really great. I'll just go back to Powell's and buy another. It's not a big deal. Yeah.
Yep.
It's a thing that happens. So that's it's an interesting thing to consider, particularly because, at least to me, one thing that it seems like we've noticed lately is that there's not a whole lot of news or interest in the iBook store. And if Apple decides to kind of get out of that business and you know, then what happens to all of the stuff that people have purchased there? Because I assume there's people that have forsaken the Amazon Kindle store and gone all in with eBooks at all by buying them from Apple in the iBook store. And if Apple decides to get out of that business because it's not doing anything for them, where does that leave people who bought all those books? I only have a few, so I don't know.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I haven't bought a Kindle book in years. I'm all in with Apple books now, so.
Yeah. And we don't hear Apple talk about it a lot. So, you know, is it going to be one of those things where they just sort of let it keep going until something happens or what? You know, kind of is what I'm wondering about right now is, you know, we don't hear them talk about it a lot, like how great it is, what kind of offerings are there, what kind of authors are publishing stuff.
Apple has talked about it recently, right? When they made the change over to books.
Yeah, there was that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think Apple is continuing to invest resources in books. I'm not worried about that going away. I mean, you know, Apple does have a fairly rich history of abandonware.
Yeah.
So it's not completely out of the world of possibility that mm-hmm. books could go away. But the mere fact that they bothered to rename it books
mm-hmm.
to me says that they're looking to the future since they're trying to drop the I out of things.
I hope that's true. I want that to be true. I know people who have like published in the iBook store and talked about how the publishing tools aren't much better lately and different things like that. So I'm hoping that that is something where Apple is continuing to care about it. Because, you know, I know a lot of people like Andrew who only buy books from the Apple bookstore and want that to continue. So that would be cool. I would also like if that were to continue. Like I said, I don't have many there, but I do have a few.
I want Amazon to have competition.
Exactly. Yeah. That's most of why I'm glad that book still exists. So, yeah. As we find out more about this, we will absolutely talk to you about it. Until then, I want to talk to you about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is KiwiCo. KiwiCo is a company that will send you a box. They call them a crate. And they send you a crate each month, and each one contains a complete project, and it encourages different facets of learning. They have loads and loads of crates to choose from. They're for kids of all ages, from brand new all the way through high school. And every crate comes with all the stuff that you need in order to complete it. So I have one that's this cool walking robot, and it's really nifty. You get all the pieces. You get really easy to follow instructions. And this one that I saw with the walking robot in it also comes with a little booklet that talks about robots and what they are and how they work and different things. And it was really nifty. Crates are shipped, like I said, every month. You can pause or cancel your plan at any time. I've purchased a number of these as gifts for children of all ages with all different kinds of interests, and they all super dug it. So here's what you do. You go to kiwico.com/TDO, and you get your first crate absolutely free. That's kiwico.com/TDO. And KiwiCo will send out your first crate free. We'd like to thank KiwiCo for sponsoring the show today. Now, our other topic today is sort of a general online security checkup kind of a situation. The first thing we want to talk about is the VPN mentor tool. And Andrew, take us through this. This is a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah, it's a really neat tool. It basically has it's kind of a short list. They only cover the big companies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you click on one of the icons on their website, it will tell you everything that service is tracking about you, like location, your address, photos, etc. So I think it's a really handy tool.
Well, and one of the things that's great about it, and this is a thing we talk about a lot here, is awareness and just having any idea how much information some other company has about you. So, Brian, this sounds like this earlier anyway. This sounded like something that you were interested in, just as a good tool to have in your toolbox, right?
Yeah, for sure. Anything that's going to help you understand what is being collected about you is a good thing.
Right.
Right. And I mean, arming yourself with information and understanding what is happening in this emerging world of surveillance capitalism is, I think it's imperative. And I know that a lot of people don't care, and a lot of people would just prefer to bury their head in the sand and, you know, stuff is quote unquote free and that's all they care about. And that's fine for those folks. But for anyone else who is all digitally woke, seems like a good tool.
It's, and the thing that was interesting to me about it was that it can, that it shows you all that stuff. It's a click. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to give an email address. You don't have to pay. And you just get to see what information these different places are tracking about you. And like Andrew said, it's bigger companies, but one of the things that I sort of liked about it was that there was a way, like, if these are the ones that I can click on, like, how many places that I can't, that are not listed on this page, also have some sort of profile of information, right?
So
that was another thing that was interesting to me about it. And it's definitely cool. And it's called VPN Mentor. And one of the things that that I also thought was kind of nice about it is that, you know, if you're using a VPN, there's sometimes there's a chance that some of that stuff isn't as easy to track. So you can always sometimes get, or you can not always, you can sometimes get around some of the tracking information just by using a VPN in order to do what you're trying to do. And while we're talking about companies that collect information about you, we have a tiny little Facebook related, Facebook adjacent, I'll say, headline. You need to change your Instagram password. And for people who don't know, Instagram is wholly owned by Facebook. So that's why this is Facebook adjacent news. And Andrew, tell us how come everybody needs to go change their Instagram password.
Yeah, so in case you had a sense of foreboding, listeners, this is exactly why I'm on today. So last month, Facebook had announced in a blog post that some Instagram users' passwords were stored in plain text. Now, they said that no outside party accessed them, and internal employees didn't access them either. At the time, they said tens of thousands of people were affected. Mm-hmm. But now, just, I think it was yesterday, they backtracked and said, no, actually, it was millions.
I'm just waiting for the follow-up backtrack to come very late today as we head into a holiday weekend. That, you know, actually, it turns out that there was some sort of, that somebody accessed it, whether it was internal or external, that somebody else got a hold of this. And, you know, this is why we're telling people. So the easiest thing to do is you can change your password. And not only can you change your password, you can do it in the app, which sometimes is kind of a pain in the neck. But you can do it on the web as well. If you go to Instagram.com, there's an option to sign in. And once you sign in, you can change your password. I found this personally to be much more convenient because I use a password manager. And it's much easier to look at the multiple characters and, you know, see the entire thing and be able to adjust it however you want to, if you want to put more punctuation in it or something, or capitalize random letters or different things like that. For me, it's much easier to do that on my computer and then just wait a minute, and then the new password will sync to my phone, and then I could just sign in on Instagram again on my phone and move on with my day. So for me, that ended up being the easiest. You can do it within the app. I think you have to click on your profile, and then there's an option in there to change your password. But it is something you can do from a web page. So if you're not up to much else right before a holiday weekend, you could always go do that on the web.
Kelly.
Yes.
I've been working on a new theme song for TDO.
Yes.
May I give you a preview draft?
I would love a preview.
It's a day that ends in Y, and it's been revealed Facebook has screwed us.
All right.
this is just a rough draft of, you know, I've been working on.
I like the direction you're headed with that. And I feel like we should use it on days when Andrew's on the show to talk about Facebook.
Well, that was an alternate lyric I was working on, because instead of it's been revealed, or it would just be it's a day, it's in the Y, Andrew is here. to tell us how Facebook has screwed us.
Well, yeah, I would like both versions of that, please, that I will swap out. One of them I will swap in as the theme when Andrew's on the show, and the other one I will just use as Andrew's ringtone. So,
that'll be nice. And as one last thing, you know, there's another security measure. Instagram does support two-factor authentication.
Yes.
Unfortunately, as far as I know, it's only you can only use it with your phone number. So it's SMS-based, mm-hmm. which is not secure, as opposed to what's called a one-time code, which you can create with a password manager or an actual dedicated authenticator app.
Mm-hmm. And there are a number of authenticator apps out there. I know Twitter works with one of them, and
there is Authy.
Yeah, Authy is the one that I use. And
Google also has their own authenticator app that yes. works with all services, not just Google services.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a person who's been worried about any of this, one thing that I will point out that is really useful that came with iOS 12 was if you get a code for something and the text message is sent in a way that iOS can parse it, then it will pop up kind of in the bar at the top of your keyboard. You know, if you're on the page where it says like, we're sending you a code and enter that code here when you get the text message. And once once you receive the text message at the top, it will say like from messages and that 6-digit number, 8-digit number, whatever will be listed there. And all you have to do is tap on it and iOS will fill it in for you. So on iOS, that's gotten a little bit more convenient overall, which is kind of a handy thing. I use a number of services that have some sort of authentication method like that. And that has been much more convenient when I've had to reset things or change something. Being able to just tap on that and have it fill in automatically is really nice. So
I wish iCloud Keychain had one-time passcodes. That's currently on my wish list.
Yeah, that's a good wish. I really wish that they had that kind of option as well. I also wish that they would give me parameters for the generated passwords. That's one that I've always wished for, because I like to use random words so that it's a little easier to remember and a little easier to type if I have to copy it from one screen to another. You know, on my keyboard, if I can't copy and paste it, if I have to type it out, it's much easier to type 4 words with stuff between them than it is a weird mishmash of uppercase and lowercase and and dashes and percent signs and all kinds of stuff. So that's one thing that I wish for iCloud Keychain, because I never use their iCloud generated passwords for that reason, because I like to have a little bit more control over what those look like, and I have a lot more adjustment in the password manager I use. So Brian, how about you? Do you have anything that you wish for passwords?
That everybody would use good ones.
Yes. That's a good one.
And use 2FA wherever possible.
Yes. Two-factor authentication is important.
And if you are being given security questions, which are the worst security idea ever, don't give answers that you can remember. Store nonsense answers in your password manager for those questions. Record the question and then record your nonsense answer or your answer that has nonsense added to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is trivial to get many of those answers, like your first freaking school or your mother's maiden name or, you know, even the car. Like this stuff is available through a lot of open records.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Many other means. Yes.
Yeah, and anyone who is serious about stealing your identity can find this sort of thing if they're specifically trying to crack your identity.
Right.
And that is not out of the realm of possibility. So if you're confronted with those questions, I'm going to say it one more time. Record the question in your password manager. Then record your answer that is either nonsense or includes nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So that it can't be guessed through any kind of, you know, records that are had on you. And these are my wishes. My wishes are really much more about people taking their security more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
than it is about things changing on the technology side. I think we've got largely the tools to help keep us safe if we use them properly.
Well, if that's what we're wishing for, then I wish that we would stop calling them passwords and start calling them passphrases, so that people will understand that, you know, longer is stronger, and use two or three words at a time, and stop making it, you know, password one. And, you know, we could stop seeing that article every year about, like, here are the top passwords from last year, and they were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and password and password one, right? And so
monkey 1, 2, 3 was one of my favorites.
Oh yeah.
Why? I don't know why specifically monkey 1, 2, 3, but that was one of the top ones.
So if you need to get into anything, remember Brian's mother's maiden name is monkey 1, 2, 3. So the other thing that I want to point out, because a lot of people I think don't think about this, is that nobody's gonna check that you answered that question accurately. So you go in and say my first car was
Monkey 1, 2, 3,
nobody's gonna call you and be like, you can't keep this account until you make that the 77 Honda Civic that you used to drive, that was actually your first car. Like, nobody's gonna do that. So whatever you put in there, it doesn't matter.
Right. Those are supposed to be easy mnemonics for you. Mm-hmm. But that's the problem with it. I hate it. Like, oh my, what? Okay, here's another thing. Why does an insurance company limit me to 16 characters for a password? Oh,
I hate that.
Oh.
I mean, what the actual crap is going on with any kind of not trivial mom and pop institution limiting me to a few characters on my password?
Well, clearly it's because insurance. It's obviously because the insurance people are getting their security policy from banks who have the exact same rules.
Yeah, something. Yeah, so, I have encountered that too. And
yeah, you can't have punctuation in your password. Like, are you kidding? Yeah, I've had exactly the same thing.
I don't remember who said it, but I thought I heard someone say, if you encounter a company that does limit your password, that's almost a guarantee that they're storing it improperly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a reason I can't use punctuation, and it's because if I put a percent in my password, it's going to break your database. And that's not cool.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, I've known a number of people. Somebody just the other day said they've been with some credit union for however long they've been with, like many, 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 many years, like decades, and said, I had a conversation with them 2 years ago about security and, you know, being able to log into the site with a secure password, and still nothing's changed, and we have to go get a different bank now. So, like, maybe if it becomes painful for companies to have these boneheaded policies, maybe there will be fewer boneheaded policies. Not none. I know better. But maybe there won't be quite as many.
Maybe.
This is my hope. It's maybe. I know it's maybe. And that's fine. As we find companies who do support this and are using better authentication methods, we will be more than happy to tell you about them. If you know of any, please tell us. You can do so by leaving a comment in the show notes. You can also email us at observations@macobserver.com. And you can find us on Twitter @TMODaily. Brian, thanks so much for coming by today.
Yep, thanks for having us.
I'm really glad you were here. And Andrew, thanks for coming by and talking to me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Thanks for having me.
And I hope everybody has a great holiday weekend. If it's not a holiday weekend, I hope you have a great regular weekend. I will talk to all of you on Monday. Until then, be excellent to each other.